an update before we get to the story. Sarah Myloff, assistant professor of history at the University of Virginia and author of the forthcoming book, The Cigarette, A Political History, provided extensive research material for historians Ed Ayers and Nathan Connelly. When this segment aired, Myloff and her work were not credited. They should have been. We regret the omission.
As of this month, Virginia residents must be 21 if they want to purchase tobacco products or e-cigarettes, unless they're in the military. Virginia's new law puts it in the same camp as 15 other states and Washington, D.C., that have raised the age to 21. Some pushback on the tobacco industry in a country with a long history of tobacco use. And for more on that history, let's go to historians Ed Ayers and Nathan Connelly, co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Welcome back.
Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, thanks.
Okay, so Nathan, tobacco is one of the great cash crops of U.S. agriculture. How early were there efforts to curb the power of the tobacco industry?
Well, first you have to appreciate that this is a big industry. We're talking chewing tobacco, pipe tobacco, cigars, and any part of this market can prove extremely lucrative and give you a lot of political power if you can corner it. Just to give you one quick example, cigarettes in 1900 are only 2% of the overall tobacco market. But the American Tobacco Company becomes one of the most powerful corporations in America by controlling this corner of this market. So the name that we associate with this is a man by the name of James Buchanan Duke. You may remember Duke University bearing the name, for example. And this company, under Duke's leadership, basically comes to control between 75 to 90% of all cigarette sales in the United States.
Wow.
I mean, it basically runs a Standard Oil kind of takeover of its competitors, you know, in the late 19th century. Now, of course, as the industry grows, progressive reformers emerge to try to curb the rise. And you have Midwestern activists like Lucy Page Gaston, who is known initially as part of the Women's Christian Temperance Movement, you know, regulating alcohol. They move in 1899 to try to basically curb cigarettes through the Anti-Cigarette League.
In 1899, she wanted to curb cigarettes. Wow.
That's right. And within 2 years, that organization goes from being founded to having over 300,000 members. Right. So there's already a population. And the argument is kind of fascinating because basically reformers see cigarettes as a moral vice that makes children delinquent. It emasculates men. It undersexes women. Mm. And we might think today about the all-American Marlboro man out west. But in the progressive era, cigarettes were basically an urban malady and a vice of wispy foreigners. So New Yorkers smoked cigarettes, or Dutchmen and Italians and Russians. You know, these were the folks who basically corrupted American society with their cigarettes. And so even though the Anti-Cigarette League doesn't get a constitutional amendment, they are able to really help to fan new regulations across 15 states and in some cases getting local regulations that even regulate women, preventing them from smoking cigarettes at the city level.
But it's interesting that they were not doing it for health reasons, not because it, you know, leads to lung cancer, but because it's a vice and it does all the other things that you just mentioned.
Exactly. Yeah, ruining the country in a moral and almost ethnic way.
Ruining the country. Okay. So, Ed, it's interesting that in Virginia, with this new law, the smoking age is going to be 21 unless you're in the military. So tell us a little bit about the history of the connections between smoking and members of the military.
Well, if you got them, smoke them. And in World War One, the U.S. Soldiers did have them. And matter of fact, the U.S. government decided that they would give tobacco rations and rolling papers to soldiers. And this is really the big takeoff of cigarettes. You know, Nathan was talking about the relatively effete reputation of cigarettes before. Nothing like going with our men to the front in World War One to remove that symbol. And General John Pershing, commander of the American forces, said, look, tobacco is as important as food. Tobacco as much as bullets, and he says. And you may remember, you may break out in song, remembering the wartime classic, Don't Be a Slacker, Send Some Tobacco.
One of my favorites.
It is. Well, you know, it's great. And it was seen as a great sacrifice if you would, you know, send a cigarette for everyone you smoked to the guys in France. So tobacco companies, you'll be shocked to know, capitalized on this patriotic connection, and they were eager to sell cigarettes and associate it not with being foreign, like Nathan was saying, all those Dutchmen and Italians, but rather American. So as America has really switched into high production in the 20s, cigarettes were seen as all American as Well, cigarettes.
Well, and that brings us to the New Deal, where tobacco was actually supported by the government.
Right, right. I mean, by 1930, you know, you have cigarettes basically now being 40% of all tobacco products, right? So a massive explosion, which means they represent a critical corner of the economy that needed saving during the Great Depression. And so you have the New Deal's Agricultural Adjustment Administration, or the AAA, which basically tries to ensure prosperity for tobacco producers. And in the New Deal's first 3 years, tobacco producers received between $180 million and $250 million every year, right? So they're paying tobacco producers to make less, to stabilize prices. And as with many of these agricultural adjustments, it leads to mass evictions and really the decimation of a lot of poorer farmers across the South. And so there is a consequence that's a little bit unforeseen. And of course, then you have, you know, after World War II, there's oftentimes a conversion that we see in urban areas where people are focusing on expanding consumption. So again, getting the government behind encouraging people to go ahead and take a puff. And you have lobbyists who initially are part of the New Deal, who then joined K Street lobbying groups in the 1940s. And it becomes another way of using the American military or foreign policy to now extend American tobacco products into the former battlefronts of Europe that are now destroyed. So another example of military or a kind of federal underwriting of the tobacco economy.
So Ed, take us to the more recent history when people start to see the connections between tobacco and cancer. How does that start to impact the industry?
Well, you know, people aren't fools. They can see that if you smoke, it has these consequences. But the tobacco industry really mobilized in the early 1950s to really create the impression that smoking was good for you. I remember as a kid, doctors in ads and things telling you that smoking was good for you, helped your voice and so forth.
Wow.
And the Tobacco Industry Research Committee, which a great circumlocution, from the mid-1950s until the late 1990s, actually spends hundreds of millions of dollars on so-called smoking and health research to mislead the public, in fact. In the early 1960s, there's a big campaign to label cigarettes, but the lobby is very strong then and just points out that cigarette smoking may hurt your health.
Right.
Not, in fact, as the record show, did hurt your health.
You know, we laugh about the idea of doctors supporting cigarette smoking, but I saw an ad recently where a smartphone was advertising that it had a battery so long that a little kid could fall asleep still watching their smartphone, which maybe 50 years from now,
right,
we'll look back and say that might not have been such a great thing,
yeah,
to promote. Let's go to today then, Nathan. Only 15% of Americans smoke cigarettes compared with 46% who smoked mid-century. Those numbers have come way down.
Well, first thing you have to think about is, you know, very much in keeping with other movements in the 1960s and early 70s, there's actually a moment when people begin to see themselves as non-smokers, right? And so, you know, people who are trying to fight back tuberculosis, emphysema, heart disease, it becomes part of changing the national consciousness about cigarettes.
Now, just as we're making these strides, we are seeing a big rise in the amount of people who are smoking e-cigarettes, especially teens in this country. Now, the e-cigarette makers are going to say, well, you know, this is a good way for people to quit smoking traditional cigarettes. But, Ed, I mean, we're seeing a trend that's moving in the opposite direction of what we've been talking about.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. One out of five high school kids today smokes e-cigarettes.
Mm.
And we can remember not long ago when they didn't exist. So
right,
it's pretty amazing that's caught on that rapidly. And matter of fact, what you find is that a considerable number of middle school students are starting,
mm-hmm,
to do
as
well. Mm. So you'll see if you recognize this theme. The industry is saying this is a good way to improve your health by,
mm-hmm,
getting off tobacco. But other advocates are saying, no, this is actually an easy way into nicotine addiction, which could lead to any other form of tobacco use. So, you know, it's we're caught in the same perpetual pattern that we've been for over 100 years now, where there's conflicting stories and conflicting arguments and evidence, but we seem to be still addicted to this nicotine.
Well, and I will say that one of the things that is also echoing history here is there's very little research at this point about e-cigarettes. We went and visited one of the FDA-funded research operations in Kentucky looking into e-cigarettes, and one thing that they're finding is that it may not cause lung cancer, but cardiovascular issues are being seen already in e-cigarette use because of all the particles in there. But anyway, we'll link to that at hereandnow.org. Ed Ayers and Nathan Connolly, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.